I better start playing Warcraft.
Yeah.
Let me find a mountain to fly atop to where I'll be safe.
Good grief.
What could be doing anything? I gotta do those dailies. I gotta get my epic mount. Hello, just... welcome to the exploding... Hey, shut up, George! You shut up! You shut up, George! You be quiet, you. This is a talking George time. You're professional. This is Bush League. Send them back to the Bush Leagues! Send them back to the Bush Leagues! Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for January 7th, 2011. This is Mike Minot.
I was really curious to see if you get the year right.
I did, because I had it open. this is Mike Minotti. I'm joined by my brother, Ajguy.
Yo.
And our good friend, George Kokoris.
Woo!
Ringing in the new year right.
Is this our first episode of the year?
Yeah, it is. The last one came out on New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's right.
Look at that.
I had to create the 2011 project folder.
That's crazy. This is the, fourth year in which the show has existed?
That's true.
We have got to be the longest running, independent game podcast.
I think so. Let's say we are.
We have to be.
I think you guys should start saying that.
Yeah, we should. Or,
yeah, just don't even bother, verify, fact-checking. Fuck that. Just go. Just roll with it.
We're going to start our Game of the Year countdown. What we're going to do is, me and AJ are going to do 10 through 6 today. George, let's assume that George will not perform well enough to be invited back next week because he usually blows it.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I'm just going to just crash and burn. Just... Yeah.
George will be giving us his 5 through 1. So yeah. We'll know what his Game of the Year is because, everyone's got to know. But before that, we'll do news. Then we'll do our little Game of the Year countdown thingy, because the developers need to know this shit because they need to know
so
now.
Put it on the box for their Game of the Year.
Exactly.
They gotta know.
I want to see an exploding barrel logo on some game's box someday.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're gonna do our week in gaming, and then the releases, and that'll be the show. I guess we're gonna get going. Let's hear the news.
Okay.
Delight me.
Okay. So, Ubisoft has kind of started...
That's a funny word.
Ubisoft?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ubisoft.
You're drunk, aren't you?
No! Ubisoft? What, is it not a funny word? Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong! I defy any of you. Go ahead, tell me that Ubisoft is a very normal-sounding word. Break it down, think about it.
It's no. I remember seeing an interview with a couple of the guys at one of their studios who said that they wanted to use the name Ubisoft because they wanted to imply that their software would be ubiquitous.
Oh, I get it.
Because clearly that's the first thing I think of when I see the words Ubisoft.
Ubiquitous software. Well, it makes sense now.
Yeah, but.
I don't get it.
I don't know. You chop off the last couple of syllables and crash the words into each other, and it ends up sounding pretty silly.
Watch out. I didn't finish the headline, and we already got derailed.
Wait.
Onward!
I'm confused.
Anyway, Ubisoft has begun to get rid of their kind of draconian DRM that requires a persistent internet connection.
What's that word mean?
Evil.
Draconian is like needlessly harsh.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Does Draco Malfoy literally mean evil Malfoy then?
I guess so.
That's funny.
They dropped it from Assassin's Creed 2 and Splinter Cell Conviction, but it's still on Settlers 7, so everyone thought they're getting rid of it, but no, they're not, and Ubi was like, we said we'd get rid of it after a while on a game, so we're just doing what we said we'd do. So basically, it just proves that they will patch it out eventually, which I don't know, silly, because I think it just like encourages people to now wait to buy their games on the PC.
Yeah, their whole entire DRM kind of mess was just, I mean, it was just very silly, because, you know, they went through all of this effort to try and make their game as uncrackable as possible and all this kind of shit. The only thing that it did was made it take an extra 24 hours to crack the game and have it playable.
They denied it after it was cracked, too. And the hacker's like, no, we're playing it quite fine, thank you.
Yeah, it's like... And of course, you know, the problem is that, you know, they keep indulging the arms race, which, of course, just contributes to even more piracy, and it's a weird sort of, like, vicious cycle that none of the big publishers can quite grasp the fact that they're contributing to it.
Mm-hmm. What is Ubisoft even making anymore besides Assassin's Creed?
Splinter Cell.
Right, Splinter Cell, Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, and...
A lot of jumping games.
Yeah.
They like jumping...
Lots of jumping games.
Could keep going.
Alright,
Invalid Command, please restate your question.
I know, I hate that stupid thing sometimes. Anyway, Mass Effect 2's daily Cerberus network updates are going to be slowing down in 2011 here. Which I bet a lot of people didn't realize they were daily. But anyway,
what about when the PS3 version comes out?
I don't know. Probably just cycle through some old ones.
Yeah, are they just going to cycle through them? Like, just start over.
I guess.
These give me the illusion of a network.
But it is going to come back in two instances. Before Mass Effect 3 comes out, which is cool. And before the final DLC comes out for Mass Effect 2 sometime in 2011. So they confirm that there's going to be at least one more DLC.
You think it's going to, like, more... directly lead into ME3?
Probably. If it's on the same level of quality as Lair of the Shadow Broker, I will be happy.
I really should play that.
You should. Sometime. It's so good.
Sometime. Next.
All right. Next, they've announced that when Dead Space 2 comes out, if you have any Dead Space game save, it doesn't have to be like a completed save, you get the original plasma cutter in Dead Space 2.
Well, that's cool. I have a save. I'm on the last level. I need to beat that. I'm telling you guys, Dead Space 2 is going to be hot.
I hope so.
You watch out. That game looked sick at
E3. I mean, that would be nice if it was. I mean, it was funny because, like, when I saw that announcement, I hadn't paid that much attention to Dead Space 2, so my first thought was, wait, you mean the plasma cutter isn't in the game?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, there's got to be some version of it.
Right. I think it's, like, just the original one.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, it was the default weapon, so, I mean,
that's like the Lancer of that game, like, to not have the plasma cutter.
Yeah, it's just in there, but maybe they just mean that you'll get the original model.
Yeah.
The original Dead Space is one of the most underrated games, probably, of this console cycle.
I'd say so.
It does some really neat things. Next. Okay.
So, Mike, remember how you said, like, one of the problems with OnLive is how they don't advertise?
They have commercials now.
They do. And they announced, and it was shown at CES, that OnLive is going to be coming built into certain Vizio TVs and Blu-ray players.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's a great way for them to get exposure for the
service. Yeah, that's pretty slick, actually. I think that's a pretty neat idea.
So, yeah, do we know how well they're doing yet?
I don't think we've gotten any numbers or anything, but that subscription service launches pretty soon. I'll be curious to see what that's like once it gets going.
Right.
The Nintendo DS is now the best-selling console ever in the US.
What did it beat? The NES?
I think so.
Nice. Very well done, DS.
Did you guys have $50 lying around last month?
Why do you ask, sir?
You could have bought harmonics.
That thing.
Yeah, apparently that investment firm that bought Harmonix bought them for $50, along with accepting all of the company's liabilities. I mean, it's actually still pretty expensive, but still, it's just kind of funny.
So basically, MTV was dying to get rid of them.
It was Viacom, which I guess owns MTV.
Oh, Viacom. Yeah, they own MTV. But I guess, like, there's a lot of expenses just with the music fees, like the licensing and all these plastic instruments now that are hanging around in warehouses across the country. And world. Mm-hmm. Mm. So, guys, what do you think of that fad? Now that it seems to be kind of at its end.
You're calling it done right now.
Oh, it's dead. Oh, it's totally dead. You think it's not? Please.
I wouldn't say dead. I'd say it's on life support.
It's dead. Life support? You see how well, you see what Rock Band 3 sold? They'll never be able to justify Rock Band 4. It would be like making a Tony Hawk Shred, which sold like 4,000 units. I mean, they could keep making them like Tony Hawk. They could deny it.
Oh, no, Mike. Maybe Tony Hawk did sell a ton over the holiday.
Yeah,
like they said it would.
Yeah, maybe it sold an extra 1,000 copies.
Hey, that's a 25% sales increase.
Yeah,
not bad.
Wow. Not bad,
that's,
man.
Woo! Yeah, that's quite a percentage, gotta say.
So, it's done. Okay. You know it is.
Well, let me ask you now if this fad's dead, then. EA has announced Tiger Woods PGA Tour 12, The Masters.
Did you see my thing on Bitmob?
Have you seen the... What's that?
Yeah, you didn't see my thing on Bitmob about this.
I did not, I'm sorry.
It was funny.
Oh, I'll have to look at it.
Everyone, look at my thing on Bitmob, which is kind of indirect, I guess. Just go to bitmob.com, I guess. It'll make me happy.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm very aware. But
yeah, the box art is just a shot of, you know, the flag at Augusta. There's no Tiger Woods on the box. Right. His name is very small.
Well, you know, cheating on your wife was one thing, but playing poorly, oh no.
Yeah.
Now you're really going to get off that cover. It is intriguing, though, they're going to have a big focus on the Masters and Augusta on there.
That is cool.
Yeah. I am certainly interested.
Yeah, I don't think I've bought a Tiger's Wood game since 2009.
Tiger's Wood?
Tiger Wood, whatever.
He said Tiger's Wood.
Tiger's Wood.
Oh, God.
You know what? I'm not going there.
Let's move on. The PS3 hacked, like, hardcore.
Yep.
Now, they're saying that they're only allowing homebrew, nothing illegal, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of like the fact that they're being really insistent on the fact that they just want this to be a homebrew thing and not a piracy thing. Regardless of whether or not that's what they actually want, the fact that they openly made that statement is still pretty rad, I think.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Sony's thing is, well, you know, we're going to release firmware updates, even though they said firmware updates won't fix it, and that just means every time I turn on my PS3 to play a game, I'm going to have to download an update. So, oh well.
That's not too different from the norm, so.
Yeah. CES, Microsoft had a bunch of things they talked about. First, a kind of obvious thing that Hulu Plus and Netflix on the Xbox will be getting Kinect support this spring, which even means that Hulu's coming this spring, so that's exciting. They showed what they call Avatar Kinect, which is basically a virtual chat room that uses the Kinect camera to not only like track your motions to your avatar, but now the Kinect can actually lip sync and even track the like motion of your eyebrows. You can like emote as you're talking to your friends,
but not fingers.
Yeah, it was annoying too, because like they had a little pre-canned avatar video of the guy doing the presentation, like announcing it, and he's like showing off how he's moving his eyebrows and his mouth and smiling, but then like he was the avatar in that thing was using fingers. I'm like, dude, this like you're making me think that's the point of this, but then you watch like the little demo video and now it just looks awkward because like the faces actually seem to be doing a pretty good job, but like everyone's hands are just flat as they kind of like thrash about. They really need to figure out a way to get it to track fingers.
I'm sure it can. I'm sure they just don't want to.
I mean, it has.
Start flipping people the bird.
They've done it on the PC homebrew stuff. It can. They just haven't enabled it for a reason.
It might be a performance thing.
I guess. I don't know. But still, I mean, I think it's a neat concept. I actually think, because one of the cool things you could do is you could take your videos and just put them online, like on Facebook or whatever. I feel like you could actually kind of do like a neat podcast kind of thing like that, where, you know, you just pull the audio out of it, but if you want, you have video with the avatars. Just, you know, that's something neat.
No.
Yep.
No.
All right, we're split on that.
Apparently.
Then they announced, what the hell are they calling it? The Xbox Live Arcade Block Party. And
explain.
The kind of surprise announcement is that one of the games coming out is Torchlight for Xbox Live Arcade.
I saw that. I bugged out.
I know. It's going to be sweet.
Because
it's just like a winter version of Summer of Arcade or something.
Yeah, it's
not
basically
Block Party,
what it is,
House Party, excuse me. But yeah. They did this last year. But like Torchlight, they talked about it a bit. It's been completely redesigned for console interface. It's like kind of like a twin stick sort of thing for like the controls.
Yeah.
You know, new UI, and even some of the kind of under the hood tweaks that are going to be in Torchlight 2 are included in this, which is neat. Along with some new content. Yeah. They also said that part of this will be Beyond Good and Evil HD.
Yes! Very excited about that.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
Although, you know, every time you know, every time there's a new Xbox Live Arcade announcement, I always get a little depressed that that Stranger's Wrath isn't going to be on that list. And it's kind of ridiculous because the guys who were doing the PSN port of Stranger's Wrath, they, you know, they were all saying, yeah, we could totally port it to Xbox Live Arcade. It wouldn't be that much work, except we're like 80 megs over the maximum file size limit. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft is like, nope, can't do it. We have a hard 2 gig limit, and you will never make anything bigger than 2 gigs.
It's some kind of technical thing. I don't know if they're able to fix it or not. I mean, I think it'd be silly of them not to, but
it would be.
Believe them.
Quick aside about that too. I'm kind of upset because I came to realize, like, I got all excited when I saw Stranger's Wrath on Steam and I like bought it. I didn't realize it wasn't like the enhanced version that's coming to PSN. It's just like a straight up.
Xbox. Yeah, no. The plan was that they did a straight port to the PC. Then they're doing an enhanced port to the PSN, and when they finish the enhanced PSN port, then they're going to move the enhanced version back to the PC. So if you bought Stranger's Wrath on Steam, then in like, you know, within 6 months or whenever, your version will get upgraded to the enhanced version.
I hope so. I was a little burned when I heard that.
Yeah, no. They announced that on their website. That's part of the plan.
Okay, that's fine.
Plans can fall through sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway, the other games on this arcade party deal is Hardcore Uprising, which is a prequel to Contra Hardcore. Let's see. Bejeweled Blitz Live, which could be fun. Full House Poker. And... yes, that's it. Those 5 games.
Summer of Arcade is not.
I think it's pretty good.
It's fine. I mean,
Torchlight and Beyond Good and Evil is pretty much enough for me. I'm happy with that.
All right, so moving along. PSP Go is also hacked. Can now load ISOs of UMD games.
Oh, thank God. Oh, finally.
You can finally play Kingdom Hearts on your PSP Go.
Yes, you can finally play PSP games on your PSP Go. Awesome.
What a clusterfuck.
I know. Yeah. We don't need to make fun of the PSP Go anymore. I think we've done enough.
The jokes write themselves at this point. Yeah.
Okay, EA is shutting down some more servers. Things people really don't care about, like Tiger Woods 09 and Battle for Middle Earth 2. But they're also shutting down The Sims Carnival, which means you will no longer be able to go play the Last Rites video game.
That's depressing. I guess that never took off, huh?
Yeah. You can still download your stuff and save it as a local file, so I need to do that for that game.
Yeah, do that.
For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I made a Arkanoid game that was inspired by Mike's fake band.
Fake band? We recorded songs.
Okay, so it's sort of
real. We recorded band. Songs like Heaven Ablaze and The Bible Burns Better. Do you want to hear the verse of The Bible Burns Better, George?
No, you don't.
Shut up! He wants to hear it, do you?
Let's... Let's
Here's
have it.
Here's the chorus. Fire, fire, down to every letter in the dark of the night. The Bible burns better, it's your dark desire. Be a trendsetter when your soul is cold. The Bible burns better tonight. I would be known I'm a very good Roman Catholic boy.
Okay. Let's talk about some Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Ah, damn it, I'm just going to be mad.
It's Mike Hagar and Phoenix.
We already know.
He's actually pretty good.
Phoenix, no. Mike Hagar, sure. I mean, Phoenix, I guess, makes sense. That's fine. Whatever. It's just not Mega Man. and he's not going to be in the game, and I'm pissed off.
I forget where I was reading, if it was Joystick or shoot, they got like a preview build, and this guy did not like it.
Really?
He said the pace was far too slow. It's really unbalanced, apparently.
Well, so it's Marvel's still a preview build,
but still.
Balancing has always been an issue in these versus games.
No, apparently, like you can recover from getting hit by a super faster than the person issuing the super recovers from doing it.
Oh, really?
So, like, you can get up and then do yours, and they're like still stuck in their animation.
Well, that's true. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Next.
Okay, so this is sort of game related, but we'll talk about it. The Mac App Store went live today.
It did, and I started using it.
And the top of the charts is Angry Birds.
I like Angry Birds.
Well, obviously.
I like Angry Birds.
Honestly,
it was pretty nice once it started working for me.
Listen, guys, I love Angry Birds. I have to confess.
I know you do. You're the best at it.
I am so... George, I am so good at Angry Birds. Tell him, AJ.
He's pretty good.
I beat a lot of the levels.
Damn.
I think most people probably can't beat that many.
That's pretty good.
When I play it, it's like Furious Birds.
Incensed birds.
It's just not unhappy birds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the biggest, I think actually the most interesting thing about the App Store was the fact that Apple put up a lot of their own programs or much cheaper than they had been previously.
Yeah.
The big
The
big one being Aperture 3, which was originally $200 and is now $80.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably because they no longer have to have a boxed product and, you know, they kind of shaved that down, you know, get more sales, whatever. iLife and iWork both, you know, broken up into individual apps, so you're not paying for a full package.
And even buying them all is cheaper than the package was anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Not by much. It's like $5 for iLife, but still.
Yeah. But the, then of course the downside being that, you know, now that there's this kind of, you know, one centralized kind of, app store type place for everybody to get their programs from, and it's kind of a no-brainer for somebody to make an app, put it on the App Store, and start selling it, there are a lot of really shitty apps on the Mac App Store.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like the first couple of months of the iPhone App Store. Because anybody who had an iPhone right at the beginning and was using the App Store during the first, like, 6 months, dude, first generation iPhone apps were worse than first generation PS2 games. They were pretty fucking terrible.
Well, they were as bad as that fireworks game, what was that called?
Yeah, Fantavision.
Oh, yeah.
Fantavision
and Sky Surfer. Okay, listen, it takes a tremendous amount of skill to make a game about leaping out of an airplane with a board strapped to your feet boring. Like, there was a lot of science that went into that game. But, I mean, regardless, like, you know, the first generation of the iPhone App Store, I'm sure most people remember that the first 6 months of the iPhone App Store were fart apps and virtual guns. And, like, that was it. And the Mac App Store has this problem now. Actually, there's a new Tumblr up called readthefuckinghig.tumblr.com, which is just screenshots of applications made by people who clearly didn't read the interface guidelines. And damn, some of the apps on the Mac App Store are just fucking atrocious. So it's going to be one of those kind of waiting games where you have to kind of, like, you know, you got to wait a couple of months before the good shit starts getting on there. But I mean, it's a promising storefront.
Mm-hmm. What I'm curious to see is, like, I mean, so much of the success of the App Store has been like impulse buys at like 99 cents and things like that. And I mean, you know, you look at like a lot of this stuff is like $30, $40, and that's saying it's like introductory 50% off price. Like there's what the hell is it called? It's some kind of like web page creation app.
Oh, like Rapid Weaver, one of those.
Rapid Weaver, that's what I'm trying to think of. It's like, you know, it's like a $50 app. Like, are people really going to be impulse buying this kind of stuff. Like, I think they're going to look at a lot of this and be like, this is way too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, like,
didn't you buy a $100 app?
Huh?
Didn't you buy, like, a $100 app? Navigon?
Oh, yeah, but I mean...
Yeah.
I'm saying, I'm one of my point being, like, I understand, like, that's what this stuff costs. But, like, you know, to me, $80 for Aperture 3 is a friggin' bargain. But someone else is going to look at it and be like, just organize his pictures. It's on this thing that looks like my iPhone. Stuff's 99 cents.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, the things like that, it's just the fact that you're, you know, you're going to have multiple markets. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, there are professional, like, sound editing and sampling apps for the iPhone that are, like, $80 or $90. And people who use them buy them. And, like, you know, on the Mac App Store, they kind of have a little bit of both, because, you know, you go and get Aperture 3, and, you know, it's a pro-level app, and the kind of person who would be making the impulse buys isn't going to be seeking out Aperture in the first place. But, you know, I'm seeing that, and I'm going, wow, that app was $200 yesterday, and now it's $80? Getting that, and, you know, like, a Pixelmator for $30. Pixelmator does, like, two-thirds of the shit that you would ever need to do in Photoshop, and it does it faster. So you're like, okay, $30 for that? That's cool. But then on the other hand, for the impulse buy people, you know, the Mac version of the Incident is up there for, like, $3. And that's, you know, I mean, that's a little bit more of an impulse buy kind of thing. Oh, sweet, $3 to play the Incident? Click! Because the Incident fucking rules.
I don't like the Incident. I said it.
You are a human being only on a technicality.
Nah, I'm getting all the Squadron of Shame mad at me. I think, yeah, Mark's mad at me because I didn't like, because I said bad things about Deadly Premonition last week. Next.
You're just running the gauntlet now. You're just trying to cover all the bases and get everybody pissed off at you. That's how that's happening.
Please stop yelling at me. Wait, I have to make a reference to Glacier.
Who?
Glacier. He was. I told someone on Twitter I would.
Oh, okay.
Glacier is a old WCW wrestler who was dressed to look like Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat. And he only he only came out a few times because his entrance was so expensive. Because they would have all this, like, ice stuff fall everywhere throughout the arena.
Oh, quick question.
That's for you, Shamrock.
I figured I totally you would totally know this. Who was the wrestler who was a cop, like, during the
Big Boss
the
Man?
That's the one. God, we couldn't think of that the other day.
You're welcome.
All right, let's move on. My final story is something neat I saw at a CES. Like, I don't think, like, it's a good idea, but it's interesting. Razer, better known for their mice, have announced a concept device. So this isn't even coming to market necessarily, called the Switchblade. It's a 7-inch PC gaming tablet running off an Intel Atom processor that uses a combination of a touchscreen and, like, a keyboard where all the keys are little screens so they can change to anything. Do you guys see the video on this?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, the keyboard kind of borrows the concept from the Optimus keyboard, where, like, every key has a little tiny little OLED panel in it so it can change depending on what you're playing. I mean, like, the funny thing, though, is that based on the prototypes that they had on the show floor and the way that the Intel reps were talking about it, not necessarily the Razer guys, but based on the way the Intel guys were talking, like a couple of other things that some people that I know had said, it seems that Razer is actually trying pretty hard to push that thing to market.
If it works, I think it's a great idea.
If it works, I mean, like, honestly, I think if they're targeting... You know, if they're targeting, you know, they're doing, like, you know, they're targeting the gamer demographic, right? We're going to make a portable device that runs Windows, and you can play all your Windows games, you can do all this shit, you know, and it has, like, this crazy fancy-ass keyboard that tailors itself to your needs and all that. What's going to make or break it is the video performance.
Video performance and price.
That, like, if it, I mean, yeah, the price as well, but, I mean, just, like, specifically, the Alienware M11X, the little, you know, the their 11-inch netbook. I have one, and I'm actually working on trying to sell it. It's fantastic, But, you know, again, at a, you know, 11-inch screen, which is already bigger than the 7 inches of the Switchblade, you know, you have, like, you know, the most video performance they could cram in there was a GeForce 335 with a gig of video RAM, which is already kind of overkill. That thing would get, like, it would drain its battery, you know, in, like, inside of an hour if you were running everything at max settings and you had to be plugged in. So, getting decent video performance out of the Switchblade with, on an Atom platform instead of, like, you know, like a faster, like, you know, core, like i5 or i7.
Well, I wonder, yeah, I mean, I know Intel, one knows? Of the things Intel announced at CES was, it's kind of an evolution of the i7 that has a GPU built into it, and they said, like, this thing by itself, this single chip, gives, like, equivalent to performance to, like, an i7 machine with, like, a mid-range graphics card. So, like, it maybe if it could, like, if this okay. is a prototype, well, then, on an Atom, and they could use that new thing into it, and, like, the actual thing, that might work.
Okay. I mean, yeah, if that was, yeah, I didn't realize Intel had announced that, but, I mean, if mm-hmm. they have some kind of trick like that up their sleeve, and they can get this tiny-ass little machine to push a decent frame rate, then, I mean, yeah, I think it's got a pretty good chance.
Yeah.
What are we?
Okay.
What?
Don't worry about it. The grown-ups are talking.
Don't worry about it. It's cool. We got this.
Hardware? What?
Look, Mike, imagine this. Imagine a no, little 7-inch computer.
No, don't explain it to me. Just move on.
You can play World of Warcraft on, and the buttons, instead of being numbers, were the actual icons for your spells.
That's cool.
Yeah, see?
Oh, cool.
I know. Or yes. Whatever the lines.
Kung Fu Panda, yeah.
Yes. Next. Okay. I'm done.
Okay.
All right.
Well then, so I guess me and AJ will do our 10-6 game of the year first. Trade off.
Okay.
Then George will just have you do your 5-1.
All right.
Okay. You want to go first?
No. I want you to go first. What's number 10?
Okay. My number 10 game of the year is Back to the Future.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right on.
Episode 1.
I really, really liked Back to the Future.
I guess so then.
Yeah, it was really good, and it just makes me even more excited for the other episodes. But I just, again, like we kind of talked about, I'm still vague because I'm almost spoiled, but there was just a moment in that game that I thought was one of the probably most well-put-together moments in gaming that I'd seen all year, like out of everything. It was really impressive.
Wait, what moment was that again?
It comes towards the end. I don't want to say what it is. It's at a part where Marty's saying goodbye to a character.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about. I just thought it was really good. So, yeah, I mean, I was really happy with the game. I think they nailed everything they needed to nail to make it feel like Back to the Future. The relationship between the characters is there. The soundtrack, of course, is phenomenal. Like, it's great.
Well, then, I'm glad you liked it so much.
All right. What's your number 10, Mike?
My number 10 is Game Dev Story.
Nice. Did you? That is this a game good one. You just started playing?
Yes.
Yeah, it just released for the Android too, so I've been playing.
Oh,
it.
I didn't know that.
That
yeah.
game.
It's so good.
That
so
game.
Addicting.
That game actually managed to pull my roommates away from League of Legends.
Wow.
Which is like, damn.
I literally, yeah. Like, well, Destructoid made some sort of list of like iPhone games you need to try. I kind of heard of Game Dev Story. I never really read up on it, and I was like, oh, it's a game studio simulation. I guess that's kind of cool. And, like, Angry Birds has kind of softened me up to the idea of iPhone gaming, finally. So I was like, I guess I could try this. And, like, it is very addicting. Because, like, I'll start one project, and, like, when I finish the game project, while I'm waiting for the sales to come in, and I'll be like, okay, I'll stop once I see how the sales come in. Well, while I'm waiting for the sales to finish up, I'll start the next project, and then... Oh no, oh no, oh no. You know, I'll
yep.
end up playing for 3 hours. You. Yeah. And I mean, I really... certain simulation games, they really do grab me. Like, you, AJ, you remember how much I was into Roller Coaster Tycoon for years and years
yeah,
and years.
Yeah.
And yeah, this... It's just a lot of fun. Well designed. And I've never seen menus handled so well with, like, an iPhone game like that. Very easy to navigate.
Yep, it's a good game. I'm surprised it made number 10 on your list. You must really like it.
I did really like it. I literally just threw it in there. I literally, as you were saying yours, I was like, let me make sure this did come out this year. Because like I said, I barely know anything about it. But yeah, it did. And I've been playing a lot of that this week. All right, then. Cool. You're number right. 9.
My number 9, Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
Damn.
It is fantastic. I mean, basically, you take Burnout Revenge, or that was the one before Paradise, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Forget Burnout Paradise ever happened, and make the sequel to that game and put in Cops and Robber mode, and real cars, and then call it Need for Speed instead of Burnout. And then, on top of that, the Autolog system, which basically brings asynchronous multiplayer to the racing genre. And it's awesome. Because every time you play, you're immediately told who beat your old records, who's got records you should go for. Every track you race, you know, you get, like, your points for coming in first, second, or third. You get points for, like, meeting certain objectives in a race, like not hitting a wall or things like that. But then it won't even make you just beat whoever's number one. It'll say, you know what? We think you can beat this guy. If you could beat him, you get bonus points.
Huh.
And damn, you will play that race over and over and over until you beat whoever it tells you to beat. It's just super addicting, super fun. When you're in the pursuit mode, it has like a kind of dramatic orchestral soundtrack that's really great. The licensed music and the regular races isn't, you know, it's EA tracks or whatever. It's fine. But yeah, I mean, it's just a really, really great arcade racing game.
I need somebody to try that one more.
Yeah, yeah.
My number 9 is Super Meat Boy.
Very nice.
Yeah,
yes.
Just a very pure platform experience, you know, just running, jumping, the wall climbing. Just the mechanics are very pure, very spot on. The game has a humor that works very well.
The success of that game lies in the fact that you will die potentially 100 times in a level, but the time from death
there's
to
no
playing
downtime.
Again,
I love that.
Is so fast that you don't care.
It's one of the few times where dying is not frustrating.
And it's
not
almost
really.
Fun to die a bunch of times level because it's hilarious to watch the replay when you do beat it and see all of your lives going at one
time.
Well,
it's great because
that cumulative replay, I think, is one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen in a game.
Mm-hmm. And it's great because most of those are short, so dying isn't that big a problem. You can get back to where you were in a matter of seconds for most of the levels. It's just a very satisfying, very rewarding, lots of fun things to unlock. It's really one of the best 2D platformers maybe ever. Very good stuff.
Cool. All right, number 8, Dragon Age Awakening.
You're going DLC on me.
Well, I mean,
it's legit.
It's great. I still haven't finished it. It's on my list of things to do very soon here, hopefully. But there's one particular character relationship in that game. This is, I guess, minor Dragon Age spoilers, but particularly if you played a human character, one of the plot points for the human origin story is your family was betrayed, and by this Arl, and eventually you do get to take your revenge on this guy. And one of the characters you encounter in the expansion is his son, who's out for revenge on you. And, like, he's captured. You go down to the dungeon of this place that you're kind of in charge of, and you get the option right there to either have him hanged for his crimes of trying to kill you, or you could give him a shot at redemption. And I was able to evolve the relationship where, like, you know, we were on this uneasy truce with each other, and then you find his sister who explained to him that, no, really, our dad, like, he went crazy. Like, he actually turned to a really bad guy. Like, it's hard to believe that's what happened. And he kind of comes to terms with everything, and it's actually gotten to the point where there are two characters are, like, really good friends. I just found that whole, like, kind of character arc really fascinating.
See, but that's good for your character, but for me, not only is my character an elf, he's also dead.
Yeah, see, my understanding is that's the case, and it's also if you just want to play the game outright, you just play like a Grey Warden from Orlais.
What was the best thing about Dragon Age?
Probably the world. I really liked it.
But not the fact that me and you were able to play and have completely different experiences.
Well, yeah, that's certainly up there.
Dragon Age 2, I don't know.
it's the world. See, that's what I like what they're
doing.
You
think it's the world? Just... I don't think the world was anything that special. The world was pretty standard fantasy RPG fare, but if you say so. It was well developed, I guess, but...
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other characters in this new DLC that are, like, there's this new mage who's really great and everything. Like, it's just, it's very well written, I guess, is what
I'm
getting
at. Is there a healer who isn't that old lady?
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
I always played them.
It's phenomenal. It's a great expansion that really kind of harkens back to the stuff they did with, like, you know, the Baldur's Gate expansions and everything like that. It's awesome.
My number 8 is Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep. Really, okay. Just because I like Kingdom Hearts a lot.
That's fair.
All Kingdom Hearts games are great. This is definitely far and away the most impressive PSP game. Looked really good. Played just like a PS2 game. I really liked the mechanics. I really liked the spell system and the way you leveled spells. I'm a Kingdom Hearts fanboy. Forgive me. That's just how it is.
Very well.
Next.
Oh, number 7, Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Wait, that low? That low?
Yeah, I knew you were going to take umbrage with this.
This that low for Mario Galaxy 2?
Let me talk. What's the
knock on it?
There's only two minor knocks. And keep in mind, this is just a testament to, I mean, how much I love all the other games in front of this. So, this doesn't mean I didn't like it. It's still a phenomenal game. One thing that does go against it, it's evolutionary, not revolutionary. It just took Mario Galaxy and just kept going, and that's great. I love that.
Was Uncharted 2 not evolutionary in a way from Uncharted 1?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Here's one thing that annoyed me more than I thought it would, and I was kind of surprised at this. I actually ended up really liking the story in Mario Galaxy.
You're annoyed that it's basically like a...
Like Mario Galaxy never happened. Instead of like this cool mystical star princess, it's just like a fat star.
I mean, I guess
kind of annoyed me.
There's never really been a continuity. It's always been kind of weird, I guess. I thought that was weird. It didn't really bug me. It didn't take anything away.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they're two very minor knocks against an otherwise phenomenal game.
Well,
I mean, if you want 3D platforming, look no further than this game because it's excellent.
I mean, I guess you just all have to wait and see where it falls on my list.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my number 6 is...
it's number 7.
Number 7. 10, 9, 8. Yes, correct. My number 7 is Metroid Other M. And I'm probably the only person in the world who loved this game, it seems like.
That might be true.
I know the story was shit and all that, and everyone was offended by the way they handled Samus and everything like that. I was infinitely impressed with the way they handled a 3D action game just using a Wiimote, that one controller, and the way it shifted from first 2D, third-person, and first-person perspectives. I thought some of the boss battles were just really, really good. I was really impressed with that game.
You may be the only person to have this on a top 10 list this year.
I know, and I know everyone else is going to hate me. Next.
All right, my number 6 and the last ones we're doing today is Civilization 5.
Very nice.
For obvious reasons. It is a game that, if you're not careful, will consume your life. It is phenomenal, and it got even better once that patch came out that kind of tweaked a lot of the balance and AI and everything. I mean, it is just fantastic. I can't say enough about it. I also should throw out, too, they started taking alpha signups for that Facebook Civ game today.
Well, okay, my number 6 is also Civilization 5. So.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, isn't that cute?
How exciting.
Isn't that just
a great way to end this week.
Yeah. I do like Civ 5 quite a lot. We need to do more multiplayer.
I know.
It's kind of hard to do multiplayer because the games take forever, but, you know.
Right. We still have a game in progress, I think, technically.
Yeah, we probably, at this point, we might as well just do a new one. But, I mean,
right.
Yeah, it's just a very fun, gorgeous-looking, deep game. We've sung its praises not too long ago.
Right, right.
All right, then. George,
give us your top 5 games of 2010.
All right.
Mr. George Kokoris.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had to sort of think some up pretty quickly, and I don't really know if I'm going to have them in any semblance of order. But for number 5, I'm going to be giving that to Red Dead Redemption.
Wow. a little lower than I think a lot of people would expect.
Well, I mean, the thing is that I absolutely love the setting and the just like Westerns in general. I mean, video games are in desperate need of more good Westerns. It's not as high as some of the other games on my list, just because, you know, it has a lot of Rockstar-isms that I can't really get behind.
One of the things I loved about was the lack of Rockstar-isms.
It definitely has fewer than you know, any of the Grand Theft Auto games, which is why I like it so much. I think it's... I love the fact that it's a satirical game, but sometimes it is so obnoxious and on the nose.
So wait, let me guess. You took issue with the Irish character who drinks all the time with a thick brogue named Irish.
No, I mean, it wasn't necessarily that. It was things like, you know, where the little like the movie house, right, that had like the little the little like kind of silent film sort of PSA things. They're like, you know, I thought they were funny. I mean, the problem is that sometimes it's very easy to try so hard to be satirical that you end up just like it's just really on the nose, and it can end up looking like you're playing it safe by just kind of taking a joke making that you know it. Everybody's going to get, and then just turning it up to 11. Instead of trying to be like kind of subtle or clever about it, I feel like a lot of the attempts that game made at being funny kind of messed with the atmosphere a lot.
I can buy that, and that's a huge problem with Grand Theft Auto for sure.
And yeah, I mean, and I guess you know now
Red
that I, now
is
that
bad,
I'm kind of
by far.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like now that I'm kind of saying all this out loud, it's much clearer, which is the fact that whenever Red Dead Redemption tried to be funny, it distracted from the things that are actually good about the game.
It was able to handle drama very well, better than I think anybody expected.
Exactly. Mm. I mean, the fact that, I mean, I think, like, even right at the beginning, over the course of the first couple of missions, the dialogue between Marston and Bonnie is incredible. I mean, it is extraordinarily well written, and of course the fact that, you know, she eventually becomes a refrigerator woman later just kind of sucks. But you know, I mean, there's like a lot of really, really good dramatic writing. So whenever it tries to be funny, it feels like the game is shooting itself in the foot, where it's going, okay, we're taking you on this journey, we're bringing you into this place, and, you know, kind of giving you this whole experience, and then fart joke, and it just tonally, it doesn't work. They don't line up. It's like there were two different writers who were competing to write the same game, and like and the tone of every scene was judged by a coin toss.
Fair enough. That's interesting.
Which is really too bad. That, and you know, and also, I mean, the fact that there's, I mean, obviously it is a huge game, so it would be kind of unreasonable for me to expect it to be completely free of bugs, but it did have some polish problems.
Yeah, fair enough. What's number four?
But yeah, so number four is Alan Wake.
I thought you said Alan Wake was your new favorite game of all time.
It got pushed down in retrospect.
I figure that.
I mean, you know, it does a bunch of stuff that I think is a little silly, and I think more than that, the moments of extreme cleverness were never really explored to their fullest extent. I mean, they, like, you know, the point near the end with all the words, when I got to that moment, that, you know, the first thing that, you know, that crossed my mind was, oh, okay, like, you know, now we're getting into, you know, like a different sort of angle for the gameplay, where now, you know, now, okay, we're getting a little bit metaphorical with the game mechanics about, you know, words turning into the objects they represent, all of that. And then 5 minutes later, that sequence was over, and I was back in the woods fighting dudes with axes. Which, you know, again, I mean, like, even just being in the woods fighting dudes with axes was still pretty compelling, but it was as though the game was going, up, we're getting really smart on you, we're gonna get really clever, nope, never mind, we're gonna play it safe. Which again, was too bad. I mean, on the flip side, you know, I thought it was really well written, but the thing that really amazed me about Alan Wake, and the thing that I'm always going to remember, is the same thing that I remember about the Max Payne games, which is the fact that Remedy has the best fucking level designers ever. And it's really easy to ignore that, and it's easy to go, wait, what the hell are you talking about? They didn't have any level design. And that's why their level design is so good. You know, I mean, my friends and I were having a conversation after having played through the game in the same room together, which is that there are sheds kind of stashed all over the game world, where, you know, you would walk into one, and in most games they would go, okay, we're putting down a crate and a chainsaw so that you know that this shack is used by lumberjacks. And it's this, like, very, very straightforward video game logic where it's like, okay, we're making this look like a thing that you would see in a video game. But you walk into one of these little shacks in Alan Wake, and they all look different, and they all look they've been used by people. So they don't even feel like levels anymore. They feel like places, like somebody just went somewhere and then duplicated it in a game, and then made you walk down a path through the middle of it. And that, I mean, you know, that really stuck with me even after having kind of come to terms with the silliness of other parts of the game later.
It's still on my to-do list, for sure.
Yeah,
Have a copy of it.
Oh, really? That's
Just need to
right.
get to it.
It What's
is
number three?
number three is Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
I've been curious about this game.
Holy shit. Now, of course, having played the Penumbra games, I knew what to expect, because the guys at Frictional are, I mean, they're really good with horror. I mean, they're really on top of it. You know, just getting the atmospherics right. And I mean, obviously, you know, and a lot of people talk about, you know, the things that Amnesia does well, and, you know, the fact that, you know, they won't necessarily show you know, the creatures that you're supposed to be encountering, so, you know, leaves it up to your imagination, and, like, visually it, you know, kind of, like, really kind of accurately represents everything. But the thing that makes Amnesia so impressive is the fact that all of the game mechanics, the actual interactions in the game, are, you know, designed in accordance with the idea of creating a feeling of horror. The fact that whenever you look at a creature or anything that would be disturbing, or any time that you walk into a room that's too dark, your vision starts swimming, the character starts breathing faster, and occasionally will start, like, gasping and kind of, like, groaning uncontrollably, which will, of course, draw attention if you let it happen too much. Or, you know, your character's fear of the dark is so intense that if you go into a dark place, you'll feel the whole room shaking as though you're going to be swallowed up. So, and you end up having to kind of balance those two things, because then you'll have to go into dark places and face the wall so that the monster that's following you won't see you as it runs past the room, but you still have to deal with the fact that now you're in a dark place, and that's frightening to your character. And, you know, if you have to slam a door behind you don't just turn around and press the E key to close the door. You turn around, hold down the mouse button to grab the door handle, and pull the mouse toward you to literally slam the door. So, you know, like, as you're getting amped up, and when you're, you know, when you're panicking, and when you're, you know, when your movements are really frantic, it's possible to screw that stuff up by, you know, not slamming the door hard enough, or not even being able to reach the doorknob in time. So, I mean, just the way that you interact with the environment adds to the horror in all kinds of ways that you wouldn't get just from having, like, a scary monster and some moody lighting. So, yeah, Amnesia, so fucking good. Everybody needs to play that game.
What's next?
Okay, number one and number two are kind of interchangeable. Like, I'm kind of going back and forth on which one's going to be at the top. So okay, I'm going to call this a tie between the next two games because I can't really
cop out.
I can't. Okay, you know what? If we're going to go based on how much time I've spent playing the games and how much time they've sucked away from me, number two is Halo Reach. I mean, come on, obvious reasons. I'm pretty sure that there is not. Yeah, I'm a Halo fanboy, and of course, I've read one of the books. And I'm the guy who's always kind of like poking around in the background, finding all kinds of little story clues and things that lead to other things. But I mean, again, just as a game, Reach is brilliant. I love the multiplayer. The addition of the equipment loadouts is fantastic. The daily challenges alone,
that was a cool thing.
Got me more into Reach than I was into, Halo 3 multiplayer, or even Halo 2 multiplayer. The game really stuck with me. I mean, like, I still, I'm playing it, a night or two a week still. Screwing around in Forge, or making save films, or, replaying little bits of the campaign to find little, like, hidden things in far-off corners of the world that I missed the previous six times that I went through it. Replaying the spaceflight mission, sitting there lamenting the fact that a single set piece level in a first person shooter had better spaceflight controls than pretty much any space sim released on a console. And just kind of like, Bungie does it better even when they're phoning it in. Why? then also from a technical perspective, I mean, lately as an engineer, I've become really, really fascinated by game audio because it's so overlooked. I mean, even in like big, huge AAA big budget productions, sound is just like, yeah, we'll get a guy to compose the soundtrack and we'll do some 3D positional sound. And, like, that's it. And, that's as far as it goes. The sound design in the Halo games, every single one, all the way back to Halo 1, is spectacular. I actually spent quite a long time having kind of a lengthy email exchange with one of their producers about the sort of intricacies of their sound system. There really is no developer on the planet that knows how to create a mood through sound the way Bungie does. That's an even bigger deal than just how good the game looks. The fact that everything just sounds perfect. And not just for creating a mood, but also for helping you play the game. You hear a grenade going off, and just based on how it's muffled and how the sound is attenuated, you not only know how far away it is, but you also kind of know where in the level it is. Because you'll know if it's an explosion in a really large room if you hear the echo, even if it's all the way across the map. It adds so much. But every reason I could possibly say. It's Halo, and I'm a Halo fanboy, so of course I love it.
Now
Plus, it has jetpacks. Number one...
I'm curious now.
Number one, it may or may not be valid, depending on what your criteria are for year of release, but going based on when this game actually hit it big, as opposed to when it first became available for download, it's going to Minecraft.
Oh, that's legit.
Wow.
2010 is definitely the year of Minecraft.
Yeah. I may perhaps have gotten more enjoyment out of playing Halo Reach than I did out of, strictly out of playing Minecraft, but purely as an achievement. For one guy to have written a game in Java, okay, which, I mean, again, if you're not an engineer, that doesn't really mean that much, but
Java fucking sucks.
well, I mean, the thing about Java is that Java as a language doesn't necessarily suck, but it is really, really difficult to make a program in Java that doesn't suck. Which is, of course, exactly what Notch had to deal with. Because I mean, like, Java does this thing where, like, every couple of seconds it does what they call garbage collection, where it'll check to see if there's any data that you've allocated that you're not still using, and it'll get rid of it for you, which is supposed to, kind of make things easier on you so you don't have to manage memory on your own. But what ends up happening is if you have a program that runs for longer than like 20 or 30 minutes, it'll start choking every few seconds while the garbage collection goes, "Wait, hang on a second, I gotta clear some shit out." And that's what Minecraft does. And if you play Minecraft for long enough, it'll start hanging up and it'll chug, and occasionally, like, whole sections of the world will disappear, things won't load, and it is so buggy and so rough around the edges and so scruffy. I mean, like, completely regardless of the sort of retro aesthetic, which I think looks fine. I mean, I think it's actually kind of a pretty game in its own way. But for one guy to have made a game, put it on the internet in an alpha state, and say, "Hey, anybody who wants to play this alpha game, totally welcome to. Just, pre-order the full version and I'll give you alpha access," and then, go up, and then, move up to beta and all this. For one guy to have released this little game and to have made 8 million euros in the span of a couple of months and ended up with enough money that he started a studio and hired four other engineers to help him put the game through beta. I mean, that is huge. And, I mean, even then, just like on a technical level, what he accomplished. Yes, it's a little world made of little 1 meter cubes, but each world that you generate is one third of the Earth's surface. And he has these, like, procedural simulations and things, the caves, geological formations, like, all of this crazy shit. Everything that you would see in a game like Dwarf Fortress, but never really got popular because Dwarf Fortress kind of has this sort of problem of representation because you're always just looking at ASCII graphics the whole time. But like, all of that kind of shit put into a context where you can, I mean, basically do whatever the fuck you want. And I mean, some of the experiences I've had playing in multiplayer and building fortresses with people and joining servers that belong to, like, 200 or 300 strong Minecraft clans who are building entire world trees. I mean, it's something else. It is a completely different thing. I mean, the funny thing that I can say is that Minecraft is such an effective sandbox that it pulled me away from EVE Online to the extent that I've suspended my EVE
Oh
account.
my God.
Ooh.
Because I know it's crazy, right? Because all of the satisfaction that I ever got out of EVE was from the sandbox, was from setting a goal and accomplishing it and exploring this huge, vast, incredible world. And unfortunately, because CCP insists on constantly shoehorning new features into their expansions without bug testing, the current build of EVE Online is so laggy that in a lot of circumstances it's almost unplayable. It used to be that you could have fleet fights with like a couple hundred dudes. Now, if you get over like 50 or 60, the lag becomes intolerable and the game just drops out from under you. So, Minecraft has kind of moved in as the sandbox game of choice as, EVE slowly declines in quality and gets buggier and buggier and buggier. you know, Minecraft is moving through beta and becoming less and less buggy. And now it's like, okay, you know what? If I want a sandbox to play in, I'm going to play fucking Minecraft now.
I've been playing some Minecraft. I mean to play more. It's certainly unique.
Yes.
Certainly an incredible achievement.
Absolutely.
Well, let's move on to our week in gaming, I guess. AJ, why don't you
I played Drive on I-77 and Aperture this week, so next.
That pleases me. Oh, wow. Wow. Whoa. Whew.
Oh, well, the other thing I did, it's mildly gaming-related, I guess, but I don't know if anyone else here is familiar with Pete's Project One A Day. I know George is participating.
Yep.
Indeed. You know, some might post him to talk about gaming a bit, but everyone should check it out, because Pete is, first of all, Pete, I know hopefully you're listening. You're rocking it hardcore at that thing, man, because I think we're up to, 105 bloggers committed to the project right now, and it's all for charity. It's breast cancer research in the UK, and it's actually a phenomenal feat, like, that he got all these
people. Yeah, no, it is.
It's super cool.
Yeah, it turned into such a huge thing, and I'm super impressed with what Pete's done with it, so... Hell yeah.
I'm not impressed.
Such a jerk.
I'm joking.
There you go. There you go. You're just trying to cover everybody from the squad. You know. Just,
yeah, I know.
Just piss off everybody now.
I guess so. All right. I mean, I played Game Dev Story, but I already talked about that. I played more Fable 3, which is still as like... You know what the problem with Fable 3 is? It's just good enough to justify my playing it more. That's the problem with Fable 3. George, have you played Fable 3 at all?
I haven't, actually.
Did you play Fable 2?
I played a little bit of it.
Okay.
But, you know, not very far. I mean, Fable 2 didn't really interest me that much past, like, the first, you know, a couple of hours. And I just haven't gotten around to Fable 3.
Okay. But, I mean, I talked about that last week. I mean, I've been playing a lot of WoW, of course. I got a lot of stuff on Steam during the Steam sales. I got the Crysis, and Crysis Warhead was like $10 for both of those or something.
Yep.
AJ got me Oblivion. I got Episode 2, I mean Half-Life 2 Episode 2, because I only ever had the orange box on
You never played it on PC?
Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
I imagine it's a very similar experience, don't worry. But yeah, that's about it. George, is there anything you want to talk about here real quick before we start wrapping
been
up?
Playing a couple of things. I mean, I grabbed the second Humble Indie Bundle.
Oh, yes.
Right.
And most of the games I already had, but the one game that I hadn't played was Revenge of the Titans.
Yeah, how is that?
Oh, right,
which
I
is
that.
Revenge of the Titans is fucking awesome. And I say this as a guy who doesn't even like RTS games in general. You're talking to a guy who has only ever finished two RTS campaigns in his life, and they were Homeworld and Homeworld 2. So, I mean, you know, for me to love an RTS is like kind of a really big deal. And Revenge of the Titans is interesting because it's kind of a weird sort of compromise between an RTS and a tower defense. In the beginning, it just kind of plays itself out like a tower defense game. You have like a building in the center and a bunch of dudes coming from the edges of the screen, and you put, you know, turrets up and take them out as they make their way in. But then after a while, you start being able to build units and command them and move them around, and then suddenly it starts to turn into an RTS, and you're going, wait, what the fuck is this game? And just, you know, just like the visual style is really cool. It has this neat sort of like blocky sort of look to it. It's very, very flashy, but at the same time, you know, kind of stays pretty minimal and pretty, you know, I guess pretty clean around the edges. So it's a great deal of fun. While I was home for the holidays, I very sneakily installed Osmos onto my dad's iPad, and just left it conspicuously on his home screen, and he beat the game
in
2 days.
It's awesome. It's really good.
Osmos is incredible. And you know, it was funny because the only video games that my dad has ever played to any like real extent are Tetris and Cannibalt. I mean, my dad's an architect, so he will kick anybody's ass at Tetris. I've never seen anybody play Tetris as well as my dad does. He's fucking superhuman. But then, you know, it's like he played like a little bit of Cannibalt, but that's it. He's not really that, you know, that big of a gamer. But as soon as he, like, it took him two levels to get the hang of Osmos, and he just went. And he just beat the entire game. Just finished all of the challenges, all the levels, everything. He 100%ed Osmos in, like, a couple of days. So, you know, I felt really good about letting him in on that. And then outside of that, I mean, I've really only been playing games that can be played in little kind of bite-sized chunks because my free time comes in really small increments. So I've been playing a fair amount of Flotilla on and off, which if you haven't played is awesome. It's on Xbox Live Indie Games, and it's also on Steam. And I mean, again, I could best describe it as turn-based homeworld. And it's really intriguing. It's really clever, and every skirmish, every battle lasts maybe 10 or 15 minutes. So you can kind of jump in, you know, have a fight or two, jump back out. The same thing with Revenge of the Titans. Each level is like maybe 10 minutes long, if that. So much easier to manage your time around the games. And you know, Flotilla is also interesting in that it was made by Brendan Chung, who's the same guy who made Gravity Bone. If you've ever played
Gravity
that,
Bone.
Yeah. Well, Flotilla's made by the same guy, so yeah, it's good. It's very different from Gravity Bone. You would never realize that they were made by the same person. But I mean, definitely, it's got the same. You know, it's got the same level of personality. You know, it's definitely, it's out there. Because, you know, you have these, like, kind of fancy little sci-fi ships and a little glowing wireframe world, but the ships are all piloted by drunken animals. It's one of these things that just kind of starts a little bit silly and then just gets sillier and sillier and spirals out of control. It's amazing.
All right.
All righty.
So, yeah, that's my week.
Well, let's get these releases done. We'll start wrapping things up. So these were the releases of the week. Emergency 2012 for the PC. Well, that's probably going to set the tempo for the rest of this week in terms of quality. Well, we have Lost in Shadow for the Wii, which is interesting.
Oh, this you skipped over Elo Milo. It's the XBLA game that came out this week. George, go ahead.
You know what? That is, I totally forgot about that. I was playing that. I actually played it back in December after the Windows Phone 7 snafu. I don't know if you heard about this, but Elo Milo was released early as a promotion for people who bought Windows 7 phones.
Yeah.
But the web page what would happen was you would buy a Windows 7 phone and there was a button on the dashboard of your phone that you would push that would take you to this webpage that would spit out a code that you could use to redeem the game on Xbox Live Arcade. The only problem was that the webpage that the phone sent you to could be found on Google. So if you just Googled Elo Milo, the third search result that came up was a webpage with a giant green button that you clicked and gave you a redemption code for the game 2 months before its official release date. Yeah. So, I played... It was a weird little thing that just kind of slipped in under the radar, but actually, one of my roommates has already beaten the game. And he and I did, like, a fair amount of co-op. I've played about a third of it, like, you know, through December. And that's great. I mean, it's an awesome little puzzle game, and it kind of presents itself, you know, with this, like, very, you know, the very adorable, kind of Little Big Planet-esque, kind of cute aesthetic, but the puzzles get very brutal very quickly.
Hmm. All right.
Well, and then after that we got... crap, 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 crap. Crap. Okay, we got a bunch of crap after that. So, thanks for listening, everybody.
Damn.
Well, Sweaty Bro Podcast. Lots of crap.
Oh, wait. Nintendo what? Nintendo did release a collection of Jason Rohrer games for the DSi, which was Passage, Between, and Gravitation, which are all, you know, they're you know, you could go either way on them. You know, some people say that they're fantastic works of art. Other people say they're kind of hoity-toity art games. But I do think it's pretty important that Nintendo actually took the, or rather not Nintendo, but another developer actually took the work of a pretty influential indie game designer and got it up on DSiWare, got it through Nintendo, and actually put it on a platform that more people have access to. So, I mean, I think it's pretty rad that they did that.
There you go. Oh, thanks for listening to the podcast, everybody. You can find more of us at explainbro.wordpress.com and on the iTunes Music Store and the Zoom Marketplace. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/explainingbarrel. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining us, George.
Thank you. Keep right exploding.
Up. Woo! We'll see you next time right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast. Bye-bye.
Peace.